It's the download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we've got Mark Baser, who is taking his show from the back of the hideout to the back of Check Please. That's right. He's going to be on TTW starting Friday, this Friday. He's going to be after Check Please in that sort of local block that they have. An eight-week run of the interview show going from the hideout to the television set. So I'm very excited to talk to our congrats to Mark. It's such a great show. I do have a cameo in the interview show that's going to be on TTW. I'm looking forward to that. I hope I didn't get cut. We'll see. Also coming up Saturday Night Live, cast member Adi Bryant. Talk about her Vimeo short film, Darby Forever, and about her life behind the scenes at Saturday Night Live and what her time in Chicago sort of prepared her for on that show. Well, right now, the Studsterkle Community Media Awards will be handed out tomorrow night at the National Hellenic Museum in Greektown. The award is given out by the Public Narrative, which is formerly the Community Media Workshop. It's a prestigious award honoring excellence in covering Chicago's diverse communities. It's print, digital, media coverage, the whole shebang. And this year's recipients range from Sarah Karp for Education Reporter reporting, Lolly Bowen for her reporting at the Tribune, Cecilia Weissman, who was a professor at Northwestern who passed away. The list also includes a man that dedicated his life to Chicago radio, and that man is none other than the real deal, the real steel, Richard Steele. Richard Steele retired last year after a 40-plus career.
You can say 46.
I was going to say, I know. 46, I know, I know. 46.
Feel bashful about that.
It made me stumble, but I'm like, the 46-year career in radio, although he continues with the barbershop show on Vocalo here in Chicago. His career started here in Chicago in 1970 on WGRT. He worked as both a jock and a program director at radio stations like WVON, WBMX, WVAC, WGCI, both AM and FM, and WBEZ. Steele is a pioneer when it comes to black radio here in Chicago and a longtime public radio talk show legend. And for years, I learned, studied, and worked for Richard. He taught me there was much more to the city than just downtown or the north side, and it was important to bring voice to the voiceless. They just don't make him like Richard Steele anymore. He's my guest tonight on the big table. Richard, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Justin.
It is true. I mean, I started my career. I was 1994, 1995. I was an
intern. Out of Columbia College,
yep,
right?
Yeah. For Tom Tuber and you on Talk of the City, and it was a tremendous experience. And I apologize again for not putting, like, we'd have to cut the articles to give to you. And the only time I've ever seen you get angry is when I would always cut the date line off of the article. Like, I'd always cut the date at the top of the, because we'd have to Xerox it and give it to Richard. There was no internet. And so you'd be like, when was this? I'm like, sorry, it was last Tuesday.
That was terrible. I was really upset about that. I'd like, when did this happen?
Sorry about it. I apologize once again. I can't get that. I wake up sweaty at night over that stuff. All right, Richard Steele, what's it mean to get a Studsterkle Award?
By the way, before we do that, I thought I was maybe coming to the wrong show. I heard you when you came on. So when I heard you talking about Cuba Gooding's buns,
buns
I
right.
said, oh, no, that's the wrong show. That was pretty funny.
We were broadcasting at that time.
Yeah.
Every time I watch that show on FX, I think about the all the people we had on those programs.
The O.J. Simpson.
Yeah. All the
Johnny Cochran came in.
Yeah, right. It was amazing. I told my friend, I was like, I met Johnny Cochran because of Richard Steele.
You know, what was amazing about that is when Cochran came in, he had a book out at that point. And my son, I don't know if you recall this, but my son was in law school. And he took off a day because he was at Northern in DeKalb. And he took off a day so he could come and sit in the studio and meet Johnny.
He grabbed it. It was a crowd to come watch Johnny Cochran.
It was great.
At that time.
Fantastic times we had.
It's funny to watch that FX show and be like, I remember that. And it's always with you, Richard. All right. So the Studsterkle Award. This is a prestigious award for people.
It really is.
For reporters. And
there have been 70 people who've gotten this award over the years and 25 years or
what's
so.
What's it mean to you?
And, you know, for me, it's kind of an interesting validation. You know, my late mother never thought that this was something that you really do for a living. And she didn't really believe it totally until she was about 80. She passed away at 94. So it took a long time for her to say, yeah, this is what you really do for a living. No, it really means a lot to me because, you know, the people who've received the award before me, I know a lot of them, or if I didn't know them personally, I know of them. And they're really superb journalists and really talented people. And I feel like I'm in such great company. And it's a little intimidating, a little overwhelming when they first called me and said that you're receiving this award. And I went, who? you know, and I was really very surprised and very pleased about
why,
it.
Why surprised? I mean, you've been doing talk shows for years.
I think of journalism. Yeah, I think of journalism. I guess in the sense that, and not everybody took journalism at Northwestern, but you know, people who sought that out as a career. I came from the music side and got into public radio, even though I did some talk shows when I was still doing music radio. So I kind of came in sideways. You know what I mean? And it's been very rewarding. And you mentioned a number of years in the beginning. I never really thought about, as these years continue to pile up, I didn't really think about it. So when somebody says 46 years, I'll go, whoa, yeah, came back here in 1970. This is 2016. So in all those years, the people I've met and, you know, the interviews that I've done that were just part of what I do because I love to do that. I love to talk to people. So it was just, you know, it was a perfect fit for me to do that kind of journalism. You know, Studs used to say that he didn't call himself a journalist. He called himself a tape recordist.
Yeah.
Because he took the tape recorder everywhere and he got these conversations with people on tape and got to hear what they think about where they live and what they do and why they do it, their families. And I'm about that. I love that.
Well, I mean, the best journalists we know are great storytellers. And you've been able to bring people into your studio and to be able to have them tell their own stories, but facilitate that for years. I mean, I've met a lot of people that I consider close friends that I learned about their work. I think of Dempsey Travis. I think of Vernon Jarrett. I think of Judge Pinchum. Like a lot of people who I would never have been exposed to if they weren't on your show and you bringing those voices to us.
And you know, I knew these people personally after I got to know them and I interviewed them, but I also knew them personally. You know, sometimes I sort of at this point take it for granted that that was just part of my life. These are people I know and people I interviewed, and I had respect for them, and they had respect for me in terms of what I do for a living, and they were willing to come on mm-hmm. and talk about things, and it was just an amazing experience. I don't know if – did you go to Lou Palmer's house with me?
I did, yeah.
Lou Palmer was a black activist.
Right there, those beautiful brownstones on – or graystones
in Bronzeville.
On Bronzeville, right.
Lou Palmer was an activist who was very much responsible for getting Harold Washington to run for mayor. And we went by his house. He didn't live long after that. He was not well at the time.
Yeah.
But to be able to do things like – we stayed, what, like an hour and a half? And we talked to him, and we had a great conversation.
Great.
He was very honest and forthcoming and welcoming. And those kinds of things are things that make me – that's what makes me love this so much in terms of what I do.
Well, Richard Steele's my guest tonight at the big table we're talking about. He's going to get the Studs Terkel Award along with several other journalists. I think it's five or six great Chicago journalists tomorrow. It's going to be at the National Hellenic Museum. It's in Greektown. It's a fundraiser for the public narrative, so it is open to the public, 5 to 8 p.m. Richard, let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about when you came back to Chicago, because you grew up here, but when you came back to Chicago in 1970 and getting into radio here in Chicago. We'll have that conversation next on The Download. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight, Studs Terkel Community Media Award winner Richard Steele. How's that feel? It feels good. It's got to feel good.
Feels great. Feels absolutely great.
Richard Steele, longtime Chicago radio disc jockey, program director, talk show host, 46 years in the business here in Chicago. Retired, I guess semi-retired because you still do the barbershop show on Vocalo.
Yes, semi. You know.
How are you enjoying life without a shift?
But, you know, it's been good because I can sort of make my own time. And I've been really busy, you know, because my daughter always says, well when does the retirement start? You know what I mean? Because I still do the pledge stuff at TTW.
Yeah, right.
And so I'm very, very busy, and I'm involved in the jazz community to a very large degree. So I MC stuff, I moderate panels about jazz. And so I'm just really involved in a lot of things.
When you came,
and some things they even pay me for.
some things, right. When you came, I mean, because you grew up here, you went to the Air Force, and you got into radio after the Air Force, right? That was and talk about getting to Chicago, because you came here in 1970, yeah. But you started in radio a couple years before.
You're right. I started in 68. I sent tapes out. I was living in New York, and I was going to school for radio, and then I sent a lot of tapes out, and they sent them back. No, I'm just kidding. And so finally somebody said, hey, you know, we've got this station. We're starting up in Roanoke, Virginia. And I said, actually, I had heard of Roanoke because I worked for Hertz Rent-A-Car, and Hertz had a rental station in Roanoke. So I said, oh, I got the job. This is great. The job paid, and I will, to this day, I remember the salary was $80 a week. And so after taxes, I got $128 every 2 weeks.
It's radio, right? But you're on the air, right? It's
1968. I didn't care. Right. I would have stayed on the radio for free, like, you know, just forever. And so I got that job, stayed there about a year.
What were you? Was it records? Was it spinning
records?
Yeah,
it was. It was an R&B station. Let me tell you a little story about the beginning of that. When we got there, the guy who owned this, who bought the station, was a local guy who owned Dixie Caverns, which was a it was a tourist attraction.
Okay.
All right. So he decided he'd buy this radio station. He'd not been in radio, but his son-in-law was a sales guy and knew how to sell radio. So he bought this station. I think a college, or one of the local colleges, used to run the station. When we got there, we had to go to the transmitter. They said, okay, the FCC is going to inspect the transmitter because the college student, they had it before, and the beer cans and stuff all around the outside. So one guy was from Detroit. I was, at that point, from New York, and another guy from someplace else. They drove us out to the site of the transmitter, and our first job in radio was with a rake and cleaning up around the,
And you were like, I'm doing this for the rest of my life.
It was really ugly. I mean, condoms and stuff all around. All right, so we did that. Here is the other part, though, because this is Roanoke, Virginia. This is 1968, right? One of the guys had a car, so, the guy drove us over there in his car, and then one guy drove his own car. And the guy said, look, this guy can drive you guys back to the other side of town. But let me tell you this. Try to get away from here before it gets dark. This is Ku Klux Klan territory. This is my first job in radio, right?
You're like $80 a week,
right,
$128
exactly.
after taxes,
exactly.
Ku Klux Klan,
exactly.
Cleaning up condoms. What a career.
Yeah, great job. Let me tell you how frantic I was about radio. When I went to sleep at night, Justin, I'd wake up sometimes and I couldn't determine whether or not I was dreaming, I was in radio and had gotten a job, or if I was actually doing it. That's how frantic I was about being in radio.
What got you back to Chicago?
Well, after Roanoke, Virginia, a friend of mine, a guy I went to radio school with, was working in Boston, and he became the program director, and he called me up. He said, do you want to... You want to make a move? Yeah, I'm out of here. So I went to Boston, and I was the morning man in Boston for about a year. And then there was a situation here in Chicago at WGRT where a guy was about to get fired. And the rep company that repped the station in Chicago also repped the station in
Boston?
In Roanoke.
Okay.
So that guy called me in Boston and said, I know you're from Chicago. Would you want to go back? I said, you kidding me? And so he said, here's who to call. I sent a tape. And they flew me in on a weekend, and they auditioned me live. They heard the tape, but they wanted to audition me in the studio. So they put me in the studio with an engineer, had him run the board, and had me. They did some breaks, and they were sitting in the office judging whether or not I was good enough to
That's
be
That's how
here.
They do it here, right?
They paid. They said they'd pay me for – they'd reimburse me for my flight if they hired me.
Right. If not, you're on your own.
So that's how I got – it was 1970.
That's amazing.
That's how I got back here.
What did it mean for you to come back to Chicago? I mean, what did you know of Chicago radio at that time? Were you like over the moon on the idea of coming back to Chicago? What did you know about it?
Chicago radio? Like, this is, part, there was part of me that thought, okay, the ultimate is New York, because I had lived in Brooklyn
sure.
when I got out of the military. And then I said, well, that's never going to happen, but when I got the shot to come back to Chicago, I thought that would never happen either. But to be back home where I went to high school and kind of become like a little local star, this was amazing to me. It was absolutely amazing.
What were you spinning at GRT? Was it R&B?
It was R&B.
So you did, at that time, I mean, 1970, I mean, it was R&B. And then as your career continued, it kind of, it ebbed and flowed from a disco to, to funk music to all that kind of stuff.
And all the 70s music, all the Motown.
How did you navigate the 70s? Because I would think that it would be tough to figure out what sort of genre to work in.
No, it was for me, because I was so immersed in the music, it was fine. One of the differences was back in the old days, in the real old. I was a guy who came along as part of the old guard and into the new guard. The old guard... When you put a record on, you put a 45 on the turntable,
mm-hmm.
you had to know how long the intro was.
Right.
There was no, it wasn't like a clock and the thing right. where you put the disc in.
Right.
None of that. You know what I mean? And so, the other thing was we had commercials. There were some commercials where you had to ad-lib 30 seconds or ad-lib some of it, or know when 60 seconds was up when they gave me some live copy. We did a lot of live copy.
Yeah, I was going to say you had to be good at math.
You know, and but I learned a lot because I learned how to do – at a later point, I was working in some job when I was between jobs. I was at a radio station where a guy had me fill in for him, and he didn't have any copy. He had, like, matchbook covers and say, talk about this lounge for 30 seconds, you know, when you come in. And so I knew how to do that because I started in an era when you had to be able to ad-lib and do that. So I was, like, really lucky. I was very fortunate.
Well, let's take a break because we want to stay on time. But I really want to talk about, I mean, I've heard the tapes. I've heard you on the tape. I've known you.
When I was doing my thing.
You were doing your thing. I mean, you just had that sound. And there's something magical about that, the sort of 70s disc jockey, you know, just that feel. And everybody knows that sound and going into that sound. I mean, it's such an amazing sound.
I was the real Steel.
You were the real Steel. And now you still are the real Steel. Richard Steel in studio with us. He's a Studs Terkel Community Media Award winner. They're going to be handed out tomorrow night at the National Hellenic Museum in Greektown. You can go. It's 5 to 8 p.m. You got a speech and everything? You got to do a speech?
Yeah, they give you 90 seconds.
90 seconds?
Yeah. So I've got about 70 seconds.
This is the speech.
Yeah.
The speech is right now on WGN Radio.
Right. I mean, it's not going to be a lot. You know, I want to thank my family and my mother. No.
You should. Yeah, okay. So we'll talk more about your career and about Chicago because you grew up here. You did radio here. You know a lot about the history of this place and radio, and we'll talk more about it with Richard Steel here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. In studio with me tonight at the big table, Richard Steel. The real Steel in this radio business for 46 years. He's getting his Studs Terkel. You're the one who told me at
right.
the beginning.
That is true.
You corrected me.
And I'm proud of that.
The Studs Terkel Community Media Awards will be tomorrow night at the National Hellenic Museum in Greektown. You're getting one of those awards for your commitment to community, to Chicago. I mean, we started talking about you as a disc jockey in the 70s, but we haven't talked about you've been not only, you know, on the air as a music jock here in Chicago, but you've done talk shows for WVON, for WBEZ, for GCI. I mean, it's amazing how much you've done, not just in music, but in talk.
You know, it's interesting how I got a shot to work at WBEZ. One of the things was I used to have a monthly chat with Harold Washington called A Chat with the Chief when I was working at WVON overnight. He'd come in. He and a security guy, and we'd take phone calls, you know what I mean? So when I was, trying to see about this job, Ken Davis liked what I did overall and said...
He was our program director.
Yeah. He said, is it possible that you could get the Harold Washington thing? You know what I said? And we did. We did it for, as a matter of fact, shortly after we started doing, I think we did one or two, and then unfortunately he passed away. But yeah, he agreed to do it.
Well, that plays to your ability. As you mentioned,
it was called Chat with the Chief.
Chat with the
when
Chief.
I was at VON. Yeah.
But as you mentioned earlier in this interview, you know, people know you, they respect you. You're able to bring different voices to air, and that's why you're being awarded this award.
Plus, I love this city. I mean, you know, we are people in Chicago. We are the original homers. We love this city. You know, I remember. When I was working for music radio, a guy who replaced me, they didn't renew my contract, I think it was at V103. And he was a good jock, but he came from California. So when he was on the air, he was talking about, you know, like, I'll have to get used to the Chicago weather and blah, blah, blah. And so when I went to the barbershop that I go to, they were in there, of course they were on my side, but they said, hey, if he doesn't like our weather, go back to California.
Out, right?
You can only talk about the weather if you're
from here.
From here.
Right.
Or if you've got some time and grade here. But you can't come here from L.A. and talk about Chicago.
One of the great things about your career, and this is specific, and this is very special in radio, is that you were able to forge a career here in Chicago for as long as you have. I mean, you didn't have to go to other markets. You started in, like you said, Virginia, Boston. But when you got to Chicago, you stayed in Chicago. Not all at the same radio station, but you're able to do that. How were you able to do that?
I have no idea. It was absolutely amazing how things would happen. As a matter of fact, sometimes after one job, I'd like to take like 2 or 3 weeks and not do anything, and I'd get called to do something else, and I'd be at another radio station. I worked for some great people. over the years. And I just, they appreciated what they thought I had and brought to the table. And I was always very, very fortunate. But let me tell you something funny about radio stations. When I first started to work for WBEZ, which is public radio, you know, we're kind of laid back. Well, this is public radio, right? So I was working at both places.
You were.
I was doing a morning show, music show on an R&B station, different vibe, right? And so the problem was, you know, I was doing the show in the morning and taking a cab. The feeder called me the cab jock in the Robert Feeder column in the newspaper.
Right.
And so I'd take the cab and zip over to BEZ. So the problem was, doing the mornings, as you pointed out earlier, I was really hyped. So then when I'd get to BEZ, I'd have to bring it way down. And unfortunately, in the beginning, I was too extreme. You know what I mean? I was so conscious of it.
You'd slow yourself down.
I'd slow it down too much.
And
I try to sound so cultured and slow. And at some point, I found a balance.
How are you able to do that? When we think about when you host a radio show and you host it for 4 hours, 3 hours, whatever it is, there's a lot of prep. There's a lot that goes into it. For you to be able to do something where you were on the air at 6 a.m. On a station and then at noon or 1 o'clock on another station, I mean, that's unheard of.
Yeah, but it required a lot of energy. Trust me. You know what I mean?
You had to be disciplined. Was the idea like, I got to get home. I got to be in bed by 7 o'clock and turn it all around?
Absolutely. When I think back on it now, it was pretty amazing that I was able to do that. Obviously, when you're younger, you have a lot of energy and you can do that. And it was a challenge. And it was a challenge not only because of the energy thing, but because of two completely different formats and, different mindset and all of that, different audience that you're appealing to and all of that. So I just have been, Justin and I have been incredibly fortunate in Chicago that all this seemed to fall into place at the right times. And one job would end and somebody would call me for another job. You know what I mean? And I happened to stay in town. It was when they read off my resume, they say, well, what happened to you? Just couldn't keep a job.
But that was the industry, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and it continues to be. We've seen the radio industry change over time. I mean, we've seen less jocks, more programming, computers, things like that.
I did a gospel show, by the way, too.
You did?
Yeah. They changed the format. I was on a station that was playing Dusties, Oldies, and they decided to change the format to gospel.
You just started doing gospel.
And so they said to me, well, in the transition period for the first year, because you have a name that's known, could you stick with it for a year? And, I wasn't really a great gospel disc jockey, but because I'm very much a part of the black community, I knew people at most of the churches and I knew about the music. So it wasn't that big a stretch. You know, it was pretty cool. I did it for about a year. I had a co-host. I had several co-hosts, as a matter of fact. And it was cool. So I was also a gospel disc jockey.
Let me ask you this, because, the public radio station primarily is a very North Shore, sort of white audience. What you have made your career on has been largely African-American black radio, urban radio stations.
Until I went to public radio.
And when you went, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, but the idea of that transition, I mean, is there a difference in playing to one side of town as opposed to another?
Maybe a slight difference in terms of how things are approached in terms of discussion. But I've always tried to be the same person. I mean, the people that recognized me from years back, I've been at TTW doing Pledge for 25 years, and so I've met people, and people have met me and connected with me from different parts of town all these years. So I try to be like the same person, you know what I mean? So I haven't had to consciously say, okay, I'm going to be talking to these folks over here now, so I have to do a different kind of.
Right.
No, I didn't do that, you know what I mean? I'm me, and that seems to
remember,
work for me.
I told this story to you. I mean, you know the story, but. And when I was producing for one of your shows, we did this idea where we would go down to the, we'd get people on the street.
Yeah, right.
And we'd say, do you know Richard Steele? And I think it was like, and we'd play a song underneath and there'd be a montage of people going, Richard Steele, I love Richard Steele.
Yeah, that kind of thing was funny.
Yeah, so I remember one time I had to go down to, I think it was the Thompson Center and they got the food court downstairs.
Yeah, yeah.
And, I'd go and interrupt people eating their Arby's. I'd be like, excuse me, can I ask a question? I'm with BZ. Do you know Richard Steele? And if I would go to, let's say, the business guy, the white business guy with us, he'd be like, he's a good, I think so, he does public affairs. Or, no, leave me alone, right? And then I would go over to the table of black women, and I'd be like, excuse me, can I ask you a question? Do you know Richard Steele? Yeah, I love Richard Steele! He's the best! Yeah, that was pretty fun. But it was great. I mean,
I remember those tapes, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember we stopped doing it because someone somewhere thought it wasn't reflected, like it wasn't diverse enough. It was someone called it out like that. There weren't enough white people going, yeah, Richard Steele, you know. And what it showed me was that you definitely have achieved that local celebrity. The African American community in Chicago, I mean, you're they know your name. You are a household name.
Let me tell you something though that really struck a note with me. The radio station did a whole summer long series on race, and it was really effective and it was probing. And so at an idea meeting, I brought up, I said, well, why doesn't somebody go to Bridgeport and do some interviews? And Kate, who was the supervising person, said, why don't you do it? Let's have you go over there and do it. So we set up something at a place called Maria's in Bridgeport.
And this was what, 2012, 2013?
Yeah, 2012.
So it's just recently.
Recently. And so it was a discussion as part of this whole series of summer-long discussions all summer long. And we had all these people come in and Bridgeport, you know, has changed a lot. So there were people in this conversation who were Asian, who were Hispanic, who were white, who were black. And it was really, and people said what they really thought about race in terms of how people got along and changes. And it was really enlightening. And the place was packed.
Did you expect that? I mean, as a longtime Southsider.
I didn't know what to expect in terms of the conversation. Yeah. But to be honest with you, when we went over there to scope the place out and we were driving through there, I saw a guy. We got close to Maria's and there was a black guy on a bicycle. So the guy was riding over there with from the station. And he was white. And I said, God, there's a black guy on a bicycle. Because I'm thinking, boy, he's going to kill.
He's in the wrong neighborhood,
you know
what
I mean? Right. I mean, but it's changed. It's, you know, I mean, there's still some pockets that haven't changed. But for the most part, it's becoming an arts, kind of artsy colony.
Yeah, in Bridgeport, yeah.
You know, but that discussion to me was so enlightening to have all these people, different races, different ethnic backgrounds and different cultures. And the people who own the place, I think they're half Korean. The person's a mixture of Korean and something else.
Yeah, Ed Marzinski. Yeah,
and
the
Polish, I think, right?
Out. Yep.
And so it's
Polish
like,
and Korean.
Polish and
they
Korean.
They were featured in Natalie Moore's book that we just had on the South Side.
South Side,
was,
right.
Yeah, it was really interesting.
So that was a real experience for me to be involved in that and be able to connect, to answer your question initially about how do you do that. I had to connect with everybody who was in that room, and they felt comfortable responding, and I felt comfortable coming to them and saying, what do you think about that?
And that's what you do. I mean, that's what Richard Steele does.
Being
on your production staff, I mean, you bring people together and you have conversations that otherwise people aren't going to have. Richard Steele, let's take a quick break. He's getting the Studs Terkel Community Media Award tomorrow night at the National Hellenic Museum in Greektown. It's from 5 to 8 p.m. You can come on out. It's a fundraiser for the Public Narrative, who put on the awards, formerly the Community Media Workshop. When we come back, I want to get your take on Chicago. What kept you here?
And I got a stud story for you.
And you got a stud story. Here we go. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest tonight at the big table, Richard Steele. He's getting the Studs Terkel Community Media Award tomorrow night at the National Hellenic Museum in Greektown, given to him by the Public Narrative, which is formerly the Community Media Workshop, along with some other great journalists here in town. You know, I mentioned, you know, 46 years in Chicago, working in Chicago media and television and, of course, radio. What's this town mean to you? Because you grew up here, but you've been other places. You're in the
sure,
Air Force,
right,
New York.
Right,
you
right.
mentioned Virginia, Boston. What does Chicago mean to Richard Steele?
It's just such a, you know, it gets in your blood, so to speak, you know, because you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's the feeling is here's a difference, I think, between maybe Chicago and New York. Here, people who know who you are celebrate the fact that you're a celebrity of sorts. But they also want to be able to come over and say, hey, Richard Steele, how you doing? And feel that you'll respond
right,
to that positively. You know, it's both sides of that coin. You're a celebrity, kind of, but you're also somebody that they can connect with. And that
you're approachable.
It's a big deal being approachable in Chicago. I know Harry Porterfield told me a long time ago. I said, well, Harry, you've lasted a long time. He said, yeah. He said, I found out a long time ago when I started People You Should Know, that works. You know what I mean?
Right.
What is he did that with like
for years.
Yeah. So what I really like about this town is the connectability, so to speak, for lack of a better term, and just being able to be part of this, whether it's you know, the Bears or the Bulls, or, you know, this is a sports town. You know, we used to have that discussion at BEZ, at Public Radio, that sports is news in this town.
Absolutely.
It is. There's no getting around it. You know what I mean? And so all of that, being part of all of that, being part of the music history in Chicago and the two different music histories is the rock end at the other end of town.
The jazz.
And on the south side and the west side, it's jazz and
blues.
It's blues.
Well, I mean, one thing we got to do, I got to come with you, went to Von Freeman.
We went to Von Freeman, you know, doing a jam session on the south side of Chicago. I think you had just started there.
Love that. I mean, but that's what I mean. I mean,
we recorded
to
that.
To understand Chicago is to see it through other people's eyes.
Sure.
I mean, it's not just about me going to the downtown sort of architecture cruise or going to Garrett's Popcorn or even Wrigley Field or Comiskey or USL. It's about being able to see what other people see through architecture, through neighborhoods. And you were able to bring a ton of people together, and you still do at the barbershop, to be able to express themselves, to tell them their story, not unlike Studs Terkel.
We did a piece not too long ago at the Women's Treatment Center here in Chicago. So, you know, women who have addictions, substance abuse, and they have children. And this is a place where they can, if you have young children, you can have your one or two children with you. And it was a very unique experience to go through that facility with their permission, do a piece, talk to the women, talk to what they were trying to achieve in terms of trying to get away from addiction. It was really meaningful, you know, to be able to do that, to show people that there are people who are in that situation who are trying to get out of it.
Yeah.
And then we went to the nursery and we saw their kids, and man, it was pretty moving.
And I would imagine you've been able to, what I just expressed about my gratitude to you and what you've been able to do to the city, you've been able to see a lot of stuff that a lot of people don't get to see through your job, through doing the talk show, from, you know, being able to go all the way to the northwest side, to go out to the suburbs,
sure,
to be able to be on the south side, to live in South Shore. Like, you've been able, like, what is the job, what has being in the media helped you understand about this town?
To not make judgments about people before you know what the story is. I mean, because, you know, it's human nature to look at something and say, oh, yeah, no, I got some thoughts about that. And I've found out that in so many cases, the thing that I thought about that, because I didn't know the whole story, was totally wrong. And there was so much more to it. And that's part of the beauty of being in this, is being able to explore the entire story. It just makes such a huge difference.
This city's changed. Maybe it stayed the same. You know, we've seen a lot of strife in the last 6 months about the relationship between communities and police.
Sure.
We've seen a continuing gap in terms of the economy. But for you, being here, being on the air, being involved in media, being a Chicagoan, living in this town over 46 years, I mean, what have you witnessed?
Is
it better or worse, I guess, is the dumb question I'm getting.
Well, you know, some things are better, obviously, and then there are things that, some things are better in that there is greater opportunity for people who are prepared to go to the next level. It's still not equal, but there is some opportunity, you know, given if your qualifications are good. But then there's a reality of the political systems. I mean, you know, I don't want to get into a whole political thing, but with the guy who's interim superintendent, it's been said he's a really good guy, and he probably is. But the question for him has got to be, he knows who all the bad apples are. And so how do you deal with that? I mean, these are people you came up, you know, through the system with, and you're a good guy. Now you're faced with the FOP telling you, okay, I know you're going to do a good job, but, you know, leave our guys alone.
Right, right,
and the other
right.
guys are saying, who are the bad guys, they're saying, oh, okay, what's this guy going to do now? Because he's going to upset the apple cart. Is he going to just, we need to talk to him and see what, you know. So I wouldn't want to be in that position. But in talking about the city of Chicago, that's kind of how it works. You know what I mean? What do they say? It's the Chicago way. City Council was, they would try to determine whether or not, remember when they were talking about the Inspector General examining the aldermen's
and they voted against
budgets, you know, the discretionary funds, and they said,
no,
nah, we're not going to.
I vote no on that one.
Nah, right. We're not going to allow that, you know. I got a stud story.
Okay, give us a stud story.
Okay, so this was a very serious story, and it you might recall this after 9/11.
I remember.
Studs wanted to make, he had a commentary he wanted to do. So our producer at that point,
Tish Valva.
Tish Valva worked, and I said, the little woman, yeah. Tish Valva was producing stuff with Studs. And she said, you know, Studs wants to do some commentary. would you like to go to his house and ask him some questions and record it? And I said, sure. So we went by, and I talked to Studs before, and so it was cool. And what he said was that, first of all, he talked about how awful 9/11 was, and you know these people should be caught and dealt with and all of that. But he said the larger picture is that we need to take a look at ourselves as Americans to find out why people hate us that much. And oh, the response to that was,
no, I remember.
They called him senile, and they said,
remember
it was
the old
awful.
The late columnist Steve Neal wrote a whole thing Times about
oh,
that.
Oh, it was terrible.
He wrote about your interview. I remember that.
But when I talked to Studs, I said, well, Studs, you know, this is still pretty raw in terms of what happened, and the response is going to be pretty negative. He said, well, my thinking is beyond today. I mean, beyond that date. He said, I understand that, but really, we need to take a look at that. And he was right.
And it still rings true. Yeah, I mean, that's something that anybody of any beyond sort of, you know, nationalism or the idea of having love for your country is just sort of a better awareness of how you're viewed globally.
Sure.
That's it.
So he was just a fascinating guy to talk to, amazing, in his late 80s and early 90s, and he could still remember like a date and a time. Like Timuel Black, the black historian from the south side of Chicago, and you can, Tim's like 96 now or 95, and you can ask him about something. You'll say, yeah, well, on October 13th of 1946, whoa, I don't remember what happened yesterday, you know. But Studs was like that.
Yeah.
He was pretty
amazing.
You're
like that, too. I mean, you just rattled off tenor. You just told us about going to the transmitter in Roanoke, Virginia, 1968.
that was really something. You remember some stuff. You know, one of the things you get a chance to do is a lot of celebrity stuff, really. And so I got a chance to, they had something called the Celebrity Pace at Sportsman's Park. And so I was in the sulky, and there was a guy from GN, Dan Rowan.
Yeah.
He was in one, and there were, I think there were four of us all together.
And you got to do that. Wow.
And it was a race.
Yeah.
You know,
and you got to go up in a fighter jet. I remember that.
Yeah, I went up in a fighter jet. You know, I won the race, by the way.
And we ate bugs at that one Lincoln Park restaurant. Remember that?
Yeah.
Chocolate covered cockroaches or something like that.
Yeah. But so they're fun things, and they're things that are meaningful and make what we do really worthwhile.
Well, you had a real impact on my life and how I see this city that we live in. You know, congratulations on the Studs Terkel Community Media Award. It's well-deserved for a great career in Chicago. Richard Steele, he's getting the award tomorrow night at the National Hellenic Museum in Greektown from 5 to 8 o'clock. It's a fundraiser for the Public Narrative. You should come on by. Richard, congratulations. Great talking to you. Good to turn the tables.
I can't get over this. You're the kid from Columbia College back
It's great to see you.
Mid-90s.
Thanks for being here.
Great to be here, man.